What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Welcome to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randall. Dive into the live courtroom drama as we bring you unfiltered audio from one of the most riveting trials of the year. Accused of multiple marital murders, Randall's fate unfolds before us. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. This is Dark Vows.
All right, let's go on the record and see 250-966, the defendant of Thomas Randall. In the record book, Mr. Randolph is present. Mr. Orm is challenging our hero on his behalf. Ms. Wagley and Mr. Hamlin are here on behalf of the city. I vote for you to proceed with the show here.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your
Honor. All right, State, can we call the first witness?
Glenn Morrison. Swear that the next one you're about to give in this action shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth will help you, God.
Thank
you. Please be seated. And sir, will you please state and spell your first and last name for the record?
Okay, I'll state. My name is Glenn Morrison, M-O-R-R-I-S-O-N Morrison.
Is your first name Glenn?
Glenn, G-R-E-N-N.
Go ahead, Ms. Parker. And sir, if you could just scoot a little bit closer to that microphone so you can speak directly into the microphone. Thank you.
And Ms. Morrison, just talk slowly if you can for our hearing today, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Sir, do you know someone by the name of Thomas Randolph?
Yes.
Do you see him in the courtroom today?
Yes.
Could you point to him and describe what he's wearing today?
Gray shirt, glasses, headphones,
Your Honor, hair. Thank you. Your Honor, may the record reflect the witness has identified the defendant.
The record was
reflected. Where was it? What state were you in when you met the defendant?
Indiana.
Indiana. And where were you in Indiana?
Edinburgh.
And like what location in Edinburgh?
Hilda's Harp House, my mother-in-law's.
Okay, Hilda Harp's house?
Right.
And that is your mother-in-law?
Was my mother-in-law, yes.
Okay. At the time, were you married to Hilda's daughter, obviously?
Right, yes, ma'am.
And what was the daughter's name?
Loretta.
Okay. So was it a social occasion when you met the defendant?
I just come up here for a weekend.
Okay. So you're just visiting?
Right.
And you met the defendant?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. What did you do that first meeting?
Drank beer and... Best friend, party.
Drink beer?
Right.
Okay. And Hilda, at that time, was she married to someone else?
Yeah, she married to Richard Harp. Hilda was.
Okay. So was Richard there as well?
Yes.
Was Loretta your wife at the time there?
Yes, ma'am.
You were there?
Yes.
And the defendant was there?
Yes.
Anybody else?
A couple kids.
Okay. After you met the defendant, did you did you do any social activities with him?
Just went to the bar and stuff.
Went to the bar. Are there a lot of bars in Edinburgh?
Three.
Okay. Was there one in particular that you went to?
Cliffs.
Cliffs Bar?
Cliff Burton Bar, yeah.
Okay. And how often would you say you drank with the defendant at that bar?
Every other weekend, probably.
Every weekend?
Just about while I was there.
Okay. Did you ever do anything else with him besides go to bars?
Yeah, went and showed me his trailer he had at Taylorsville.
A trailer he had down in Taylorsville?
Yeah, that's outside Edinburgh. Outside Edinburgh.
Okay.
Trailer park.
Did you ever go hunting with him?
Yeah, he came to Columbia, Kentucky hunting before.
He took you hunting?
Yeah, I took him down there hunting.
Oh, okay. You took him?
Right.
Okay. Did you ever work on cars, anything like that?
Yeah, I messed around with a car a couple times with him.
Okay. So were you kind of like friends at that time?
I'm not real good friends, but I knew him through Hilda and him.
Okay. But you would see him pretty frequently, like once a week?
Yes, ma'am.
There's objection to leading.
Thank you. Did you ever see the defendant in possession of guns?
Yes.
How many occasions?
Well, he went hunting a gun club a couple of times at Camp Edinburgh, I think it was Indiana.
Okay, so you said he went hunting and there's a gun club there?
Yeah, there's an army base there, gun range there.
There's an army base with a gun range?
Yeah.
Did you go there with him?
Yeah, we went, shot guns there, yes.
Okay. How many times do you think he did that?
We did about three times, I have.
Okay. Was the defendant involved in a relationship with anyone related to Hilda at the time?
Hilda's sister.
And what is her name?
Frances.
Okay. Was the defendant married to Frances?
No, at the time, no.
Was he married to someone else?
I think so.
Okay. Was that your understanding?
Yes, my understanding was, yeah.
Okay. But he was kind of having a relationship with Frances
right. On
the side?
Right.
Okay. At some point, did you go to the defendant's residence, his trailer?
Yes.
And how long had you known him, do you think, before you went to the trailer?
About a month, 2 months at the most.
1 or 2 months?
Yes.
When you went there, let me ask you this. Did you only go there one time?
A couple times.
Okay. Was there a time that you went there where he was going to ask you to do something for his wife, or about his wife?
Yes.
Was that the first time you went there or sometime after?
Second time.
Second time. And when you went to the trailer, were you with anybody else besides the defendant? Was there a third person?
No,
there?
Nobody ever made him.
You and him?
Just me and him, yes.
Okay. What did he talk to you about on this second time?
About wanting to make some money.
About if you wanted to make some money?
Yeah, I need a car. So.
Did he talk to you about a car, too?
Right.
What did he say about a car?
Well, I could get a car and money if I would go do a little job for him.
Okay, if you would do a job for
right.
him? Right. You would get a car and money?
Yeah, give me 30 minutes to get away.
And he'd give you 30 minutes to get
away. Before we call the cops.
Before he called the cops. Let me ask you a couple questions about that. Prior to this meeting at the trailer, did you ever see the defendant with larger sums of money?
He always had money.
More money than you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So it seemed like he seemed to have a lot of cash on him?
Right.
And did it? He obviously had a car?
Yeah, two cars.
Okay. So he seemed to be doing pretty well?
Yeah.
How about yourself at that time? Did you have a lot of money?
No.
No, you didn't?
No.
Okay. So he offered to, if you wanted to make some money and get a car, what did he want you to do?
Well, we shoot his wife.
He wanted you to shoot his wife?
Right.
How was that going to happen?
Well, if I shot his wife, come in and shoot him, rob like a robbery.
Like a stage robbery?
Right. If I could go to the safe, open up the safe and get the jewelry out, that's where he had the gun. He probably shot me too.
Okay. So the plan involved a safe?
Yeah, a safe in the house, yeah.
Okay, and he had a safe in the house. What was going to happen with the safe?
Well, he had to open the safe to get the money out for me.
Okay. So were you going to act as the robber?
Right.
And then what were you supposed to be doing?
I was supposed to shoot his wife.
Shoot his wife?
Yeah.
And then
stage robbery, then just shoot him in the leg, give me time to get away.
And shoot him in the leg?
Right.
And then he said he'd give you 30 minutes to get away?
Right.
What, and I think you said something about jewelry. What was going to happen with that?
Yes, jewelry too, act like a robbery.
Okay, so you'd take the jewelry and the right. robbery? And then, so you would get 30 minutes to get away, and then what would happen?
You call the cops.
And where would you be?
I'm probably dead.
Well, I get what you think would have happened, but, like, what was his proposal, his plan?
Well, he gets money, pay me.
And what would, where would the money be coming from?
Interest money.
Insurance money?
Interest money.
And how long did he estimate it would take for him to get that insurance money to pay you?
Not too long.
Okay. How much do you...
I'm sorry, what was your answer?
Not too long.
Not too long.
How much insurance money were you going to get?
About 30, 40,000.
You were going to get that much?
Yeah.
Okay, and then he would keep the rest?
No, I go get 5,000. I'm sorry, 5,000.
Oh, you were going to get 5?
5,000, yes, ma'am.
And then he would keep the rest?
Yes.
Okay, what about the car? What was going to happen with that?
I guess he would report it stolen.
Okay, what about the jewelry? What was going to happen with that?
I have no idea.
No idea. So when he made this proposal to you, had you two been drinking?
Yeah, I've been drinking.
You've both been drinking? Did you agree when he made this proposal?
No, I didn't agree to nothing.
You didn't agree to anything? Why not?
I ain't getting shot. I know it's a... I know.
You thought you'd get shot.
Right.
Why did you think that?
I just did.
Well, what did you think would happen?
Well, if that shot her, he probably shot me.
Okay.
There's robbery.
So you did not, fair to say you didn't agree to do this?
No, I did not.
Did you ever socialize with him after that?
Yeah, I seen him a couple times.
Okay, at the bar you mentioned?
At Hilda's house.
At Hilda's house. Did you tell anybody about what he said?
Just my brother.
Okay. Did you tell Hilda?
Hilda knew. I told Hilda. She didn't believe me.
You told Hilda, but she didn't believe you? How about her husband?
Yeah, he knew about it.
Did he believe you?
Yeah, he believed me.
Okay. What about Frances? Did you tell her?
No.
Okay. Did you think Hilda was going to tell her?
Probably.
He didn't tell Frances? I'm sorry. Did he say he didn't?
He said no.
At the time he made this proposal, did you know who his wife was?
No.
Had you ever met her?
No.
Had you seen her?
No.
Okay. So you didn't know who he was talking
about? No, I didn't know who he was talking about.
Okay. But you said you wouldn't do it?
No.
That was a bad question. You refused to do it, correct?
No.
Okay. Other than telling, I think you said your brother and Hilda and Hilda's husband, did you tell anybody else?
Loretta, my wife.
Oh, Loretta, your wife. Okay. Did you go to the police or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
I thought there was nothing to it.
I'm sorry?
I didn't think there was nothing to it, you know, really.
You didn't think there was anything to it?
No, I thought you just...
You didn't think he'd do it?
No.
Okay. But you didn't want to participate?
No.
Can I have the court's indulgence for a second? Thank you, sir. I'll pass the witness, Your Honor.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Morrison.
Good morning.
Mr. Morrison, you don't like Thomas Randolph, do you?
I gotta guess him.
You called him a chicken shit. Is...
Well, yeah, he is chicken shit.
Okay, so you do have something against him because you told the police he was chicken shit, and you've told the court today he's chicken shit, right? You don't like him in part because you believed that Mr. Randolph was an undercover officer and he was trying to set you up on things. Isn't that right?
Yes, in a way, yes.
And... You didn't like that very much because you thought he was an undercover officer and you'd had problems with the law. Fair?
No, I ain't had problems with the law.
You haven't had problems with the law?
I ain't had no serious problems with the law. A DUI, maybe yes, if I did.
How about a drug trafficking conviction? You got a drug trafficking conviction?
That was here about a couple years ago.
Okay. And, you know, Your Honor, there's no jury here, and I talked to the prosecutor.
They had nothing to do with him.
Hold on, just 1 second, sir. There's no question that's pending. I'm sorry?
I've talked to the prosecutor. There's no jury here, so I'd like to ask him a little bit more questions about his criminal history.
Yeah, and, I mean, obviously, for the purposes of this hearing, I have no objection for this to be in front of the jury. You'd have a different...
Don't understand.
You have a sexual assault conviction? Rape conviction?
No.
You've never been charged with rape?
I was thrown out of court.
So you're charged with rape?
But you threw it out of court.
And how about murder? You're charged with murder?
No, I ain't been charged with murder.
Attempted murder?
Nope.
Okay.
My brother.
What year did this happen that you're describing? When was this discussion with Mr. Randall?
I don't know the date. I had no idea what the date.
Okay, now let's put dates aside. In other words, February, March. Let's talk about years, sir. What year did this happen?
Can't remember.
Could it be 1998?
I have no idea. I don't remember.
Could it be 1981? Could it be?
Could be. Could it be? I don't know.
Could it be 2002?
No.
No. Okay, so we know it's somewhere between, how about 1970s, mid-70s?
I don't know. I recall.
Okay. So somewhere between the mid-70s and 1999, in that 25-year period, this happened. Fair?
I guess.
Well, you were there, sir, not me.
Well, you know the answer, don't you?
Sir, I'm going to need you to answer the questions that are being asked. Somewhere during this time period, did this happen?
Yes.
Did you know him for a 25-year period?
No.
It's your testimony you never met this wife?
No, I never seen his wife. It's just Francis.
Okay, well, so you thought he was asking you to kill some wife in this time period between 1975 and 1999, fair?
Right.
You telling the truth?
Well, I got no reason to lie about it.
Do you recall telling the police that you thought it was a girlfriend with black hair who he brought from Utah, who you were supposed to kill?
Right.
Okay, and you actually met this lady, didn't you?
No.
You saw the black-haired lady?
I saw the black hair, but it's some house, but I didn't go to the house or nothing. We drove by in the car.
Okay, so you met this black-haired lady?
I never met her, no.
So
I've seen her.
How did you know what she looked like?
We were driving the car.
And you saw her?
At the front door, yes.
Okay, you're going to have to explain this to me. How did you see this black-haired lady in this period of time where you're saying you were going to...
Well, he pulled up in front of a house, knocked on the door, some black-haired lady come out. He said something to her, got back in the car, and left.
And you thought that was his girlfriend, and he brought her from Utah?
Right.
And then you tell the police that you're supposed to kill his wife, and that's the woman?
I don't know which one you're talking about.
You don't know what one I'm talking about or which one Mr. Randolph was supposedly talking about?
Which one he's supposed to be talking about.
Okay. When the prosecutor asked you questions, she said, did you ever meet the wife? And you said, No, I never met
the wife.
Okay, let me finish.
Just Francis.
Sir, you have to let him finish the question. She's writing down everything you said. She can only take down one person at a time.
So you said you never met the wife, right? Correct?
Right, correct.
And now you're telling the judge that, I did meet this black-haired lady, you see.
I never met no black-haired lady.
Okay.
I seen her.
Sir, you have to let him finish his question. He's not finished.
You saw this black-haired lady, and you thought that was his girlfriend from Utah. Remember, we just went over that.
Yes.
And that was the woman you were saying to the police, that's the woman I'm supposed to kill, right?
Right.
So, in fact, you had seen this person you were supposed to kill.
I imagine.
You're the one that saw it, sir. Did you see her, yes or no?
I seen a black-haired lady, but I didn't know that was the one.
So you told the police that was the one, though, didn't you?
I guess.
And then you came into court today and said you never actually seen the woman, correct?
I'm going to object that. Misstates his testimony. He said he hadn't met her. He explained he saw her in a car. He saw her.
You said today to the judge that the insurance was supposed to be in the amount of $30,000 to $40,000, right?
I said, that's where you're supposed to go, I guess. I don't know what it was.
Well, that's what you said.
I said, right, that, yeah, okay, I just said it.
And this occurred sometime as far back as the mid-70s. So, you know, we're talking about a 50-year period here, right? You remember the $35,000 to $40,000, that was the amount, right?
That's where you're supposed to go, you said. Yeah, I don't know exactly the amount.
Do you remember the police asked you? That's right. The police came and talked to you in Kentucky, didn't they?
Right, yes, sir.
And do you recall the police asked you, do you know how much insurance money he had on her? Do you remember being asked that question, sir?
Something about $30, $40.
Okay. Do you recall telling the police? No. He never talked to me about it. Do you recall that?
No.
If I showed you a copy of your transcript, would that refresh your memory, sir?
I got a copy of it.
Okay. If you reviewed a portion about that questioning, would that refresh your memory, sir? If I show it to you?
No, I'm going to stop and see. I know it.
You know that you said that there was, you didn't ever talk about insurance proceeds with Mr. Randolph? You told the police that, didn't you?
Yeah, it's supposed to do, it's supposed to be for insurance. That's what you're supposed to do.
Sir, let me ask you this. Did the police, do you remember the police saying, do you know how much insurance money he had on her? Your answer, no. Do you remember saying that?
Yeah, I remember saying no, yeah.
Okay, and then questioned by the detective, he never told you, and your answer, no. Do you remember that?
It's on paper, I guess I do.
And then they repeat it, say how much money he had, and you say no, right?
Right.
So today, we know that it's $30,000 to $40,000, correct?
Correct.
And when you talk to the police in 2008, you told them you never talked to them about that subject, about the amount.
Just the amount I was going to get.
So how did you come up, if you were only going to talk to him about the amount you were going to get, how did you know to tell the judge today it was $30,000 or $40,000, sir?
Because it's, well, I don't know.
Okay, do you agree that you're, it's not funny, right?
I ain't laughing.
Do you agree your answers appear to be different? Like you're saying to the police you never discussed the amount of insurance money, and today you can tell us definitively it's $30,000 to $40,000. Do you see those answers are different?
Sure do, yes I do.
You told the police that you didn't like Mr. Randolph, didn't you?
Sure did.
And you didn't like him, did you?
Not at first, no.
And you didn't like him, and in fact, you tried to convince one of his future wives, Frances, not to marry him, right?
I never told her not to marry him.
Did you warn
my mother-in-law?
I'm sorry, I interrupted you, sir.
I told my mother-in-law he ordered her to marry her.
You never told Frances? You never warned Frances?
I told her she don't know I'm good enough to marry him.
I'm sorry, I just didn't.
I said I told her that she don't know him good enough to marry him. She just met him.
Okay, do you remember the police asked you, did you warn Frances not to marry him? And you said you did.
Yeah, I warned her not to marry him because she don't know him good enough.
And she didn't believe you, did she?
No.
And Hilda didn't believe you, did he?
No. Nope.
Did she? And do you know that Richard... You said you told Richard?
Yeah, Richard knew already. Yeah, it's Richard probably.
Yeah.
Who is
Richard? Hilda's husband.
Okay.
And we're going to be able to show, you know, Richard denied that to the police. He didn't say that he knew anything about this. Does that surprise you, sir?
Not a bit.
So nobody, strike that. Hilda, how well did she know you?
I was married to his daughter.
So she knew you pretty well?
Yeah.
And when you spoke, she didn't believe you. Correct?
Right, she didn't believe me.
So somebody who knew you real well didn't believe you, right?
She didn't know me real well, she knew me.
Okay. And Frances didn't believe you either, right?
Yeah, I didn't know Frances that good though.
She didn't believe you, right?
Right.
And you're not saying Frances was the wife because it's this black-haired lady that you saw, a woman named Leona. It was Leona, right? Wasn't it? Say it.
I guess it was. I don't know her name.
Wasn't Sharon, was it?
I have no idea who it was. He had five wives, six wives, didn't he?
You didn't know the name. You didn't know what this person looked like other than she had black hair.
That's right.
And I don't mean to be rude, but you said she had a big chest, right? Do you remember saying that?
I said it.
You also remembered an intricate detail. Do you remember during the conversation at the trailer what you guys were drinking and how much?
Beer.
What kind?
Bud.
Budweiser. How many?
I have no idea.
Do you remember saying it was two?
Two.
Two Budweisers, 12 ounces. Do you remember saying that before, under oath?
I remember it.
I showed it. Copy of your transcript, would that refresh your memory?
Yeah, I guess, whatever.
Okay, permission to approach you.
Yes.
I am showing grand jury day 13.
Grand jury?
I'm sorry, jury trial, day 13. Sir, I'm showing you your prior sworn testimony, and you're asked about what, if you knew about what you were drinking. Could you read the answer to yourself, just to yourself?
I see it.
Okay. Does that refresh your memory as to what you said?
Yeah, I got the same championship, man. I got the same one you got.
Answer the question. Does that refresh your memory as to what you said?
Yes.
Two 12-ounce Budweisers. Is that right?
Right.
So you can tell us it's 2 ounce or two 12-ounce Budweisers, but you cannot tell us within a 25-year period when this happened. Correct?
Correct.
You talked a little bit before in your sworn testimony how you felt that Mr. Randolph was a police officer or a cop or an undercover cop, right?
Right.
You blamed him for things, didn't you? You blamed him for what you thought was getting you in trouble.
How's that?
Did you think he was trying to set you up?
Everybody at the bar thought he was a cop.
So you felt you were being set up, is that right?
Right.
And that made you angry, right?
Made a lot of people angry.
Made you angry?
Yeah.
Did you ever report any of this to the police?
No.
Did
I thought
you?
It was all bullshit.
Say again?
I thought it was all bullshit.
So Hilda didn't believe you. Francis didn't believe you. And you thought your own story was bullshit, right?
Right.
Before, you didn't contact Metro, they got a hold of you, Las Vegas Metro, right?
Right.
And they asked you what you knew about this case here in Las Vegas. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And you told them, well, just what you guys told me on the phone. Right?
Right. I don't know about it.
So they told you. You didn't know anything about it. They told you what it was, right?
Right.
And they told you that they believed that Mr. Randolph was involved in killing his wife for insurance, didn't they?
Right.
And they told you how this thing supposedly happened. It was almost just like what happened with you, right?
Right.
They told you the story, didn't they? What they claimed was happening here.
No, they told me somebody could kill. I thought it was Francis.
Okay. But they told you their theory of how it happened here, right?
Oh.
That there was a home invasion.
A home invasion, he shot the hitman, yeah.
And then they come to see you, and you repeat a very similar story, don't you, sir? What you've claimed?
Well, yeah, it's true. What I said is true. I got a reason to lie about it.
I'm sorry. while I'm waiting for this, did you, whether it's true or not, believe that Mr. Randolph had slept with your wife?
I wouldn't have cared.
You wouldn't have cared?
No.
Did you believe he had slept with your wife?
No.
Did you believe he slept with your mother-in-law?
Probably did. Everybody has.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
So there. Everybody has.
Oh, okay.
If I showed you this lady that you said came from Utah, would you be able to recognize her?
No. I never seen her face. That goes just black hair I've seen.
Black hair? Right. If I showed you a picture, you think you'd be able to recognize her if I showed you?
Doubt it.
You doubt it?
Right.
So you don't know the name of the wife, you don't know what she looked like, you never reported it, right?
Right.
You don't like Mr. Randolph, do you?
I got nothing against the man.
You don't know. You called him chicken shit.
That's right, he was chicken shit.
That concludes cross-examination.
Redirect.
So, Mr. Morrison, when you spoke with the detectives from Las Vegas, was that back in 2008?
Right, yes, ma'am.
Okay, so that's about 15 years ago. And the events you were talking about, they were even before 2008, fair?
Right.
Okay, so you're recalling a conversation and events that occurred quite a while ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Was this the only conversation you ever had with Mr. Randolph about staging a robbery and killing someone for insurance money?
Yes, ma'am.
Is that why it sticks out in your head?
Ma'am.
So Mr. Oram was asking you if you had conversations with detectives from Las Vegas, like over the phone prior to them coming to your house. Did you talk to them a lot before
no.
they came up?
No.
Did they just kind of show up?
Yeah, they just showed up in the yard.
Okay. Did they tell you, hey, look, we want you to tell us a story about a staged robbery? Did they tell you what to tell them?
No.
Did talking to them make you want to become involved in this case?
No, I won't be involved in it.
Okay. Did you tell them just the events you recalled about your interactions with Mr. Randolph?
Is it? Is all.
Did you make it up because Las Vegas detectives were there investigating a homicide?
No.
Had you read the newspaper or anything about the Las Vegas events?
Nope. I know nothing about it.
Do you even care that much about what happened in Las Vegas?
No, I don't.
Okay. You're here because the state asked you to come?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Now let's talk about, just briefly, when he made this proposal to you, my understanding is that you told Hilda and you told her husband, Richard, right?
Right.
Francis, you said you shouldn't marry him. Is
yeah.
that right?
Yeah, you wouldn't know each other well enough.
Okay, so the reason you gave to Francis for not getting married is you don't know this guy well enough?
Right.
You didn't tell her about the murder-for-hire plot?
No.
Okay, those were the Hilda and Richard, and I think you said your brother are the three that you told.
Right.
You never told the police?
No.
At that time, did you want to get involved with local police telling them about this type of thing?
I don't get involved with police about nothing.
I'm sorry?
I don't get involved with police about nothing.
You don't want to talk to the police about anything. You only had this one conversation with him about this. Is that fair?
Fair, right.
And then you never talked about it again?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Can you follow up, Ms. Cowan?
Yes, just very briefly. Just one last question. You didn't want to be involved in this. This is something you really wanted to push aside and, you know, try to avoid, right?
I don't know about it.
Do you know what Dateline is? Do you remember
yes,
Dateline?
No, Dateline.
Because I've seen video. They came to your house, set everything up, and you gave an interview to them, right?
Right.
So you were pretty interested to talk to the press about it, weren't you?
No.
Did they didn't force their way in? You
no.
just agreed to talk to them?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Nothing for it.
And
follow up,
Ms. Berkman?
No,
Do you have any further witnesses?
No, Your Honor, I did tell the court and counsel yesterday that we would, were the court to grant this motion as an offer of proof, we would be able to contextualize that he was married to an individual in Indiana and there was life insurance on that person.
Okay.
I think we agreed that sort of the crux of the motion would be the testimony of Mr. Morrison.
That's true. We did agree to that, and I'll just address any more arguments.
Okay, and so there will be a stipulation that there was a wife in Indiana, there was an insurance policy on her, Mr. Randolph was a beneficiary.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Any further witnesses from the defense?
No, Your Honor.
All right, State.
So, your motion? Yeah, so Your Honor, what we have in this case with regard to Mr. Morrison, very similar to the facts that we have in the case, our case from 2008, is we have Mr. Randolph contacting an individual that he knows for 1 or 2 months. That time period is nearly identical in both cases. He sets up a situation where there's going to be a staged home invasion, burglary, robbery. Involved in both cases. Mr. Randolph is the person who has guns in both cases. In both cases, Mr. Randolph would be sort of a minor victim of the encounter. In both cases, there was going to be a payment for insurance money. In both cases, Mr. Randolph flashed money to the individual he's soliciting to commit the murder ahead of time. In both cases, he finds someone who's sort of financially struggling and down on their luck. In both cases, there is going to be sort of a staged theft of jewelry associated with the event. And in both cases, Mr. Randolph's going to be the person who calls the police ultimately to report the crime. That is...
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off the record. Well, I had some difficulties understanding the witness at some points, but what I recall the witness testifying to you, according to my notes, is that he saw Mr. Randolph with some guns at a gun range. He right. said that they had gone to, I don't think he said it was the sheriff's department, but he said that they had been together and he had seen Mr. Randolph with guns mm-hmm. at an army base at a gun range.
That's correct.
Well, did he testify that there was any, during this discussion, that there were any guns? Because I never heard...
No, he testified that he saw him with guns, but the court actually, you point out another similarity between Mr. Morrison and also our current case is that a gun range was involved between the individuals in our case and as well as Mr. Morrison.
But when you're saying he saw Mr. Randolph with... there was guns involved, I watched the interview and everything in regards to this case, but he never testified that there were any guns that were present during the time that he had this conversation with Mr.
Oh, for sure.
Am I
yes,
correct?
Yes.
Okay, there was parts where I didn't understand everything he said,
okay,
but I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss it.
I'm sorry. I misspoke if I said that. I meant that he saw Mr. Randolph in possession of guns. He knew him to be in possession of guns. The mechanism of death would be a gunshot and also... as the court pointed out, in both cases, he suggested that one of the activities they would participate in ahead of time is going to a gun range. In our motion, we cited the court, I know the court read the whole thing, but I just would like to highlight one part of Fields v. State, and this is 125 Nevada 785. And the court talked about how a prior instance in the Fields case where they obtained power of attorney over an individual, altered a will, and basically had financially control over an individual who ultimately ended up dead, that a prior instance where they did those same exact things to another elderly individual was relevant to motive and was relevant to identity. The court stated in that case, a defendant's knowing participation in prior acts with alleged co-conspirators may be admitted in the proper case to refute claims that the defendant's acts were nothing more than innocent acts of a friend. More importantly, this will be on page 791 of that case, the Mobert and Polinsky facts, those are the two separate instances in the Field case, are sufficiently similar to permit the Mobert evidence to be used to show identity. Both scenarios involved grifting an older man, Polinsky was in his 60s, Mobert was in his 70s, who, facing loss of control of his life through hospitalization or prison, gave Linda power of attorney, which she then used to transfer assets into accounts held by her and Fields when the man recovered his autonomy and protested his missing money and property. And so what the court is explaining is when you have two parallel incidents that are strikingly similar, that is 48045B evidence. That is evidence of identity, and that's what we have in this case as well. The court in Fields also noted that the fact that the Mobert solicitation, meaning the earlier incident, did not lead to his death while Polinsky ended up murdered, weakens but does not eliminate the probative worth of the Mobert evidence. So if this court was under the impression that, hey, look, nothing really happened with Lynn Morrison, he didn't end up following through, the Nevada Supreme Court already addressed that in Fields and said that that doesn't eliminate the probative worth of some prior conduct. Now, the state is certainly cognizant that this court is very familiar with the first Randolph case and the Randolph opinion. In the first trial, I know the court already knows all this, but in the first trial, there was evidence of the Utah case, which was endlessly complicated because it ended in an acquittal and it was sealed. And that was a major complicating factor that the Nevada Supreme Court discussed at length on appeal. Had the state only limited the prior bad acts testimony to the testimony of Mr. Tarantino, the analysis would have been quite a bit different. In the first trial, the district attorney and the investigating detective in the Utah case, where he ends up being acquitted, were called as witnesses, and there was a lot of discussion about whether or not she actually committed suicide or was murdered and that sort of thing. And that's where the Nevada Supreme Court said the state went way beyond what was allowed in the order. In this case, we are not seeking in any way to, obviously we're not seeking to introduce anything with Utah, but when we have this testimony from Mr. Morrison where it is nearly identical. He is married to someone, and he's having an affair on the side. He meets this guy who's kind of down on his luck and ends up befriending him. They end up going to a shooting range. He shows him he has a lot of money. He offers this proposal that is identical to what the state is alleging occurred to an individual who is remarkably similar to Michael Miller. If that isn't evidence of identity, I don't know what would be. This is like a signature crime and a signature modus operandi that Mr. Randolph employs in order to capture insurance money. So the state certainly understands there would need to be a limiting instruction, but from the state's perspective, we've met our burden, and it's highly relevant evidence, and the probative value is not outweighed by any risk of prejudice.
Yes, Your Honor, the analysis comes from Tinch, and the first part I would talk about is clear and convincing evidence. I think it's very interesting that there, one, this case has been overturned, and that's where there was a jury trial. There was a conviction on Tarantino. There was an acquittal in the jury trial. Here, look at what they're putting in. They brought in a man who didn't tell law enforcement, but can, you know, accurately tell us that in a 25-year period, he had this conversation. Sometime between the mid-70s and 1999, this occurred. I look at Fields. They just quoted Fields to you. And in Fields, as we point out in our opposition, it was a taped statement. The state wanted to introduce a taped statement. And as the Supreme Court noted, the tape is what the tape is. The defense couldn't even dispute the clear and convincing evidence. You can hear it on tape. When I think of clear and convincing evidence in this case, I think how much lower could the bar be? He doesn't tell law enforcement. What he tells us is that anybody he supposedly told didn't believe him, except for Richard. Richard Hart was interviewed, and he said, I know nothing about what he said. He knows nothing about it. So there's absolutely zero corroboration of this man who has drug trafficking conviction. He referred to the defendant as chicken. He called him a name, a disparaging name. When I look at the standard of clear and convincing evidence, and the state cited to several cases, they had corroboration in every single case they had. Just like in their last case with Mr. Randolph, at least they had a jury trial. At least they've got some evidence that this occurred rather than just some guy coming in here. He's just making it up. He's making it up. And how can we show that? I thought the most interesting thing was somewhere between 25 and 50 years ago this happened. He can't remember the year, but today he could remember the insurance. The insurance was $35,000 to $40,000. Well, I went with him through the police asking him, did they talk about how much insurance money? No. Nope. He never told you? No. Nope. How much money he had? No. Nope. But I don't really understand how the man now can come in here and say, yeah, this is the amount of insurance proceeds. He's making it up because it sounds good. And it's also interesting that they try to say, well, he wasn't interested in what was happening here. Well, he gave an interview. And he made a mistake when he told the police, the only thing I know about is what you guys told me before you came over. And then he admitted that he knew sort of what the plot was or the state's theory was. He is just simply repeating what this story and making it up. He says he doesn't even know who the wife is. He says it's a black-haired lady. What I would suggest is the black-haired lady is a woman named Leona. What they're asking us to stipulate to is a woman named Gaina. And he even mentioned Francis. You can't tell who he's talking about. And so to me, it seems very, very dangerous. Also, we cited to both federal and state cases on that it is widely held in both Nevada and in other federal jurisdictions that remoteness in time of an alleged bad act lessens, if not outright neuters, the overall probative value of the evidence, United States versus Frankhauser. We have consistently noted that events remote in time from the charge incident have less relevance in proving later intent. Walker versus State, that's 2000 case cited in the brief. Phillips contends that remoteness in time of the conviction lessens the probative value. We agree. The Nevada Supreme Court doesn't like remoteness, and we don't even know how remote, up to 50 years. And, you know, another thing that I thought when I was preparing for this is, if there's a witness on the stand and I was to bring up his conviction, let's say for robbery from 1990, and he was released from paper in 1991, I'm going to get chastised by this court. I should know the rules. Felony convictions within the last 10 years are what's admissible. Yet the state wants to just disregard that, because the reason we do that is because it takes away. If the conviction's 30 years old, it really shouldn't have that much on credibility. Here, we have something maybe as much as 50 years old, this unsubstantiated charge. If this isn't remote, if this isn't the type of thing that both the federal courts and the state court have caused great concern about, then nothing is, because we can't even tell a year. They don't have a single case they were able to cite where there is absolutely no corroboration of the allegation, no substantiation of the allegation. I would cite to the Nevada Supreme Court in Tucker, where they say the danger of prejudice to a defendant is ever present, for the jury may convict now because he has escaped punishment in the past, nor has the defendant been advised that he must be prepared to meet the extraneous charges. They put that man on the stand at the penalty phase last time. They didn't even think it was worthy of doing a bad acts motion. They did the bad acts motion, which drew it, I believe, because they knew he was in prison. And then they put the man on the witness stand, and they were just burying Mr. Randolph. You don't want to belabor the point, but there's no credibility. There's no clear and convincing evidence. They missed that on Tinch. I actually argued Tinch in the Nevada Supreme Court, and that's the three-part standard. So they're missing it in 2 points. There's no clear and convincing evidence. And the prejudicial effect to us is overwhelming. It is very difficult for Mr. Randolph to defend against these two allegations. It really should be what the Nevada Supreme Court said back to this. Try Mr. Randolph on what happened in 2008 and see whether he is an innocent victim or whether he conspired. They're struggling to show a conspiracy with Mr. Miller. And what they're going to do is try to bring him up and say, oh, look at the identical charge. Oh, look at that. That's exactly what they did before. And it was found to be reversible. This will receive heightened scrutiny. And we would ask the court to deny their motion.
We're going to take a 10-minute break. We'll be right back.
Just briefly, Your Honor. I guess Mr. Orme is suggesting to this court that in 2008, the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department detectives rolled out to Indiana and spoke with Glenn Morrison and were somehow able to convince him to tell a story consistent with their evidence. The court has observed Mr. Morrison and heard him talk and heard him describe things. Are they seriously suggesting that he was somehow able to mimic an event at the request of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department? Because that's the question for this court. Did he make this whole thing up and happen to be consistent, describing things in his own words, in his own way, because he's some mastermind, because he's really dying to come to Las Vegas two times and testify against Mr. Randolph? Or is this some conversation that actually happened to him that he thought was so unusual that he was able to describe twice consistently? He doesn't seem to have a lot of stake in this. He doesn't seem like someone who's terribly interested in accommodating police departments. He has a lot of credibility because he doesn't really, he's sort of no nonsense in how he testifies and describes things, describes events. I understand, like, there's a remoteness argument, but that is, you know, like, that's kind of with intent as the exception. With identity, I don't think it would be the same thing. And we're not talking about something that's common, like buying drugs or something like that. We're talking about, you know, soliciting the murder of your spouse for insurance money. By the nature of that type of crime, it really isn't something that can happen every day or every month. But it's something that happens a lot with Mr. Randolph. It happened in two separate occasions that we know of, probably more if we like delved into the Utah stuff. We're talking about something that is so consistent and so signature with what occurred in our facts in this case that it is highly probative. It's almost helpful that it didn't occur and it didn't happen in Indiana because Mr. Morrison refused to participate, because it doesn't make it prejudicial in that instance. And so the state respectfully asks the court to admit the evidence.
Well, I mean, I read the Fields case, and the major difference between this case and Fields is they did have corroborating evidence in Fields. And while I understand that Mr. Morrison may be the only witness to this, Ms. Morrison's testimony has a lot of problems. Mr. Morrison doesn't even know this woman's name. So basically, we would literally be telling this jury that Mr. Randolph solicited him to kill somebody whose name we don't know, who could be the black-haired lady, but I'm not really sure if it's the black-haired lady because he had never met her. He didn't really know her. He doesn't know if that's her. There's no corroboration in anything he says, as well as the remoteness is a problem, and the courts have determined that it is a problem. And when we're talking about a possible 50-year time span, but we don't really know when it is, that does take away from the probative value of this. He tells a story, and he tells a story that has a lot of similarities to what I believe the state is going to allege in this case. However, there is no corroboration like there was in Fields. This court does not find the testimony to be clear and convincing, and based upon that, the prejudicial nature outweighs the probative value, and it will not be admitted during this trial. All right, we need to do the waiver. All right, let's talk about the penalty waiver. Mr. Randolph, did you have an opportunity to review the stipulation in order to waive penalty in this case?
I need your name remain seated.
Yes. Did you have an opportunity to review that with your lawyers?
I did.
And did you sign this document?
I did.
And prior to that, did you have any questions for me or your lawyers?
No, they answered them.
Did you understand that by signing this document, you are agreeing that if you are convicted of first-degree murder in this case, I will choose the punishment and it will not be put to this jury?
Yes, ma'am.
So you understand that this jury will not be penalty qualified and we will not ask them any questions about punishment?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you have any further questions for the court regarding the penalty waiver?
No.
All right, I am going to sign the penalty waiver and it will be filed in this case.
You're listening to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph. There's more raw courtroom drama ahead as we bring you unfiltered audio from trial. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a minute. More Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph, next.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.